Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, broadcast and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media and American League Baseball capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Failure is epidemic in America these days. Some of it earned, much of it dropped in the laps of hardworking entrepreneurs who did nothing wrong but have still seen their life work vanish in recent months. But when Dean Shepherd, the Randall L. Tobias Chair in Entrepreneurial Leadership at Indiana University's Kelly School of Business, when he sees failure, he smells opportunity. He's the author of a new book called From Lemons to Lemonade, Squeeze Every Last Drop of Success Out of Your Mistakes. For my part, I'm hoping this interview is more lemonade than lemons. We'll see. Dean, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thanks, Bob.
Good to have you here. Let's just jump right in. Isn't failure in business just failure? I mean, what makes you think there's some good to be gotten from ill?
Right. Well, I suppose failure in a business is the same as many other different types of failure. I think what makes a business failure so important or so devastating when it happens is that we get so much out of our businesses, and our businesses are so important to us, such that when they're gone, they actually generate this quite a large negative emotional reaction that hurts us quite badly, and it takes us a long time to recover. So unlike we might make more minor mistakes where the consequences aren't as great, I mean, here we may actually lose something that's very important to us, not only part of our financial livelihood, but it might be part of our identity. It might be how we react or how we identify with others. It may make us feel like that we belong as part of a group, and once the business fails, we no longer feel that sort of feelings of competence, those feelings of relatedness. So we have a major negative emotional reaction when the business fails.
So is failing in business a bigger deal than failing in the rest of your life, in romance,
yeah.
And
yeah.
As a father, whatever?
No. I think it matters what's important to you. So if something very important to you you lose, then you're going to have this emotional reaction. But also there's an opportunity there, hopefully, that you might be able to learn from it, such that you won't have to put yourself through this kind of emotional reaction in the future. But in many ways, there are similarities across these failures in different areas. Indeed, where I started with this research was when my father's business failed. I saw the reaction that he had to it and the time that it took for him to recover before he could, learn from the failure and be motivated to start again. And when I saw that negative emotional reaction, it seemed to me it was similar to the symptoms that people feel when an important emotional relationship or attachment has been broken, either through the death of a loved one or a divorce or something like that. So I delved heavily into the psychological research to try and understand, well, how do psychologists help people deal with the grief over the loss of a loved one in order that I could help people like my father, whose business failed, to more quickly recover from the emotional, the negative emotional reaction, to be able to learn from the experience and then be prepared to, be motivated to try again. And that was kind of like my underlying motivation for the book.
Hmm. I think people can tell from your voice, especially in the United States, that you're not from here originally. You are from Australia, I believe. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
And what did your father do? What was his business?
He was in the construction business. And it was unlike today's times where times are very tough. It was actually in very good economic times. But that increased the amount of competition and the amount of people who were doing the building. And so he just got into trouble, financial trouble. And this was quite a few years ago. So I was a PhD student. This was probably 12, 14 years ago. And I was teaching my entrepreneurship classes, that failure is part of the entrepreneurial process, that failure is the fire that tempers the steel of an entrepreneur's street savvy, and all of these types of things that are contained in textbooks. And when I got the phone call from my dad, and he told me how bad the business was going, I told him that he had to close it down, and, you know, to close it down quickly. And it always stuck in my mind, you know, that here I am teaching my entrepreneurship students that failure is just part of the process, and that it's a great opportunity to learn, but without giving them the tool, you know, without allowing them to acknowledge that there will be likely a negative emotional reaction, that it's important that you kind of process those emotions and those regulate those emotions so you can learn so that you won't make those same mistakes again.
And at that time, when you got that call from your father, did you think, you know, there's a big difference between teaching it and living it?
Absolutely. I mean, it caused him and us great distress and anxiety for a very long period of time. And so, you know, I don't treat, you know, the notion that, you know, hey, you fail and then you learn as just some, inevitable, painless process. It's really the opposite. You know, it's really a process of being able to kind of deal with your emotions, to manage your emotions, but realize that, it is a very painful process, and it's painful because for the very reason that the business was important to you and that recovery can take a long time. And the whole motivation for the book, I think, was, you know, just, hey, you know, there might be some way that we can help people kind of recover more quickly. And this is the kind of the lemons to lemonade, is that, you know, hidden within all of this distress and anxiety is the belief that one day we'll eventually get out of it. Two, that we can kind of promote that so it happens sooner. But also there is a golden opportunity here that we can kind of learn a lot from these incredible emotional and physical investments that we make in our businesses to kind of improve our knowledge so that we can hopefully avoid those mistakes in the future.
I have to ask you, as you were saying it, I was wondering, I've always grown up with the phrase about turning lemons into lemonade, but is that a common phrase down under, or is that something you've adopted since you've been here?
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty common down there as well. Yeah.
Okay, just curious. If you knew then what you knew now, would you have been able to help your father maybe prevent the collapse of the business?
I think I might have, and that was the motivation for doing this research. You know, in fact, I actually delayed doing the research for quite a while because the research was kind of a little bit quirky, and I still hadn't received tenure at my university at that stage. So I kept doing the normal research, but always had in the back of my mind that I wanted to do this regardless of whether it gets published in academic journals to help people. And eventually it did get published in the academic journals, and I could actually write this book. But it's interesting. I still haven't actually spoken to my dad too much about it. And it's because, as you pointed out, we're both Australian, and we're both Australian males. And we're kind of socialized into this notion that you don't talk about your emotions. You just deal with it, you know. And I think that makes us generally happy people for most of our lives, other than for the really big events. And when that particular way of dealing with your emotions is ineffective, when it's a significant loss, and when we have significant negative emotions. And so, really, my dad in the book, I talk about this whole idea about a restoration orientation, where you don't think about the failure; it doesn't generate those negative emotions. And that you concentrate on the things that are causing you secondary causes of stress, like you go and find a job, sell the house, move the kids from school. And then if you're able to address those secondary causes of stress, when you go back and look at the actual failure of the business, it doesn't hit you as hard. So while that's effective to a certain degree, eventually you actually need to kind of talk about your emotions and confront your emotions, because that actually helps us try and understand, well, why did the business fail? You know, what are the things that I could do differently? And as you kind of create an account for why the business failed, the negative emotions, when you think about that business, are actually diminished each time you're able to come up with this kind of plausible story for why the business failed. So really what we need to do is kind of oscillate between, you know, thinking about the failure, talking about our emotions, regulating emotions, and on the other side, you know, this restoration approach where you kind of avoid thinking about your emotions and you address these secondary causes of stress, and you also give your mind a rest from all these emotions. So he was stuck in one approach, and really I should have tried to help him, pull him every now and then to just talk about his emotions, to think those things through, and then allow him to quickly go back to his normal default position of not thinking about the emotions and trying to avoid them and just keep oscillating. But, you know, the problem with Dad is the problem that I have is that we both don't feel comfortable talking about emotions. Fortunately for me, I feel more comfortable writing about them than actually talking about them. But knowing now, I think I'd make that additional effort to just every now and then pull him out of, this kind of denial and this other proactive orientation, and just every now and then pull him aside and say, hey, Dad, how are you feeling? And try and kind of build an account, an understanding of why the business failed. So, I think I would be able to, I would definitely be able to help other people with that now.
Now, you have the benefit of the knowledge of the men in two cultures, two communities, shall we say, Australia, Native Australia, and the United States. Are American businessmen any more likely to be willing to talk about their feelings and their emotions when they fail than their counterparts in Australia?
You could be getting me in a whole lot of trouble here.
You wrote the book. I got to ask the question.
Exactly. I think an extension to the book is I'm going to look more into these cultural differences, because I think culturally people deal with mistakes and with failures differently. And I think definitely there's a couple of things that here that I think the American culture, as opposed to many of the other cultures in the world, is the most entrepreneurial of all the cultures. And that being most entrepreneurial, I think people celebrate other people giving things a go and realizing that as they give them a go, they're pursuing these opportunities that exist in these environments of uncertainty. And surely, when you're pursuing things of uncertainty, some of them are going to fail, some of them are not. And that you kind of applaud people for giving it a go. And I think your bankruptcy laws reflect that they're relatively forgiving on people who give it a go but then fail and have bankruptcy. So in some ways, the culture's more forgiving of failures. Other cultures, for example, Australia, are less forgiving of failures, and therefore it actually hurts more when you fail. But also I think there's differences, I was saying about an Australian male. I think an Australian male in some ways is similar to, your American cowboy, someone from the West or someone from a ranch or someone from a tanner or something like that, where they're also, John Wayne wouldn't talk around and express his emotions. So in some ways, I think, my dad is kind of like the same generation as like the American cowboys who feel less comfortable expressing their emotions. So I'm sure there's kind of subcultures within the U.S. of people who feel very comfortable expressing their emotions. But then they may actually suffer a different problem than my dad, and that is they're stuck in one orientation and find it difficult to get to the other. I mean, it's good to express your emotions. It helps us kind of build an account for the failure. But then our mind starts to turn to how bad we felt about how bad we felt when the business failed. And these kind of emotions start to escalate. So that the more that we think about the failure, our negative emotions start to actually increase rather than decrease. And it's in cases like that where people who always want to talk about the emotions really need to take a break from it, focus on something else, give their mind a rest, maybe start addressing some of those secondary causes of stress, and then alternate back. Neither approach is more effective. The most effective approach is for people to every now and then come out of their default position and try and use the other way of regulating your emotions.
And Dean, do you differentiate between the person who makes mistakes, has failures within a business, but keeps the business going, and those who make the mistakes and the business collapses? And because they both learn from that experience.
Yeah, they both learn from the experience. I think in the book I mainly talk about, the person that you said that makes mistakes but keeps the business going. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think people keep businesses going when they shouldn't.
And right, I read that.
Yeah, they do that because it's really throwing good money after bad. And eventually the business will fail. So in some ways they're kind of in denial, or they're kind of procrastinating by putting off the hard emotional short-term cost of closing the business down, even though that's going to give you a long-term financial gain in doing so. So, you know, it's always a little bit tricky when you're an entrepreneur and you're running a business to say, when should I close the business down? You know, should I persist? And we're always encouraging our entrepreneurs to persist despite the obstacles. But sometimes, you know, you don't want to persist despite reality. You know, if you know the business is going to fail, you need to think about, you know, emotionally preparing yourself for that failure and being able to kind of retain some of your resources, your financial resources and your emotional resources, rather than just keep persisting with the business that'll eventually fail and you completely deplete all your emotional resources and all your financial resources. So, I mean, I realize it's a tough call because these businesses are operating in uncertainty and you don't know for certain that it's going to fail. But you need to kind of think through that decision. Otherwise, it's going to cost you a lot more money than it need to.
I think you're referring at least in part here to Chapter 3, which is when to pull the plug to maximize personal growth, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
How should any of us know when enough is enough? There's no light bulb that goes on, when the plane is going down and the floor lights come on.
Exactly.
you don't get the benefit of that. How do we know?
Exactly. I think one way to do it is just to be mindful and not close your mind off to the, you know, to the signals that are coming in. You know, so sometimes we get into denial and therefore we ignore information that disconfirms our propositions or our assumptions that the business is okay. And so in one way, it's just to keep it real, you know, to keep aware of the information that's available to you. Also, I mean, to seek advice from trustworthy counselors, you know, people that, you know, your mentors or colleagues or, other people who might be able to provide you some advice to say, look, you know, it's looking bad. And really there you need a friend that gives you tough love, not just someone that says, oh, keep going. But it's a very difficult situation. So I think if you keep aware or open to information and you don't kind of activate this denial, and you also have the belief in your ability to kind of, you know, overcome the emotional problems that will come, that you will recover, that you will be able to cope, then I think you're in a better position to realize when to pull the plug.
I do a lot of writing about economic development, and I find that the communities that don't see the loss of an industry or a major company as a loss, but rather as a new opportunity, tend to be happier and healthier in terms of their attitude towards the failure within their community. And an example of that, and maybe I'm far afield here, you'll have to tell me that, but here in Florida, Polk County, which is to the west of Orlando and Disney, it went from being known for oranges and phosphates up until the 70s and early 80s to using its centralized Florida location to become a distribution hub. They took they took their lemons and made lemonade. Is that too far afield from what we were discussing?
No, other than if they had have persisted. I mean, this is an analysis just based on what your conversation is and me over the phone, but if they had persisted with oranges and stuck with, you know, this notion that, you know, entrepreneurs persist despite the obstacles, then they may never have made that transition and they may never have moved to a superior opportunity. So in some ways you've got to kind of realize, hey, this is going in the wrong direction, and you've got to be open to the information that might reveal these new opportunities. And also hopefully they've kind of learnt from any mistakes that they may have contributed to the downfall of the previous industry, and being able to apply that to this new industry. And I don't know whether that means don't focus, put all your eggs in the one basket, maybe diversify. I mean, I'm not sure, you know, exactly what that regional economic strategy is. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important to realize that when you're in a declining industry, sometimes it's better to cut your loss and jump onto a superior opportunity.
And tell me about self-compassion and failure, as you write about in the book.
Yeah, I mean, I think this kind of goes back to this notion of the Australian male or the cowboy. I think we often are happy to show compassion to someone else that's failed, but are less likely to give that same compassion to ourselves. So I try and think of it this way, that if your friend's business failed, what are all the things that you would say to them? And you tried to make them feel better about themselves. You would try and say, well, how did it fail? You try and help them understand it. You help try and kind of build up their esteem again, try and help them build their skills and experiences so they won't have the same problem again. Self-compassion is really just the compassion that you'd show others. Why not show it to yourself? So in other words, kind of be a little bit kind to yourself by saying things like, well, look, the way that I feel now, all people feel. And, don't worry, I'll be able to overcome it. Or this notion of common humanity is, yeah, I made a mistake, but everybody makes mistakes sometimes. The important thing is for me to learn and make sure that I don't make the same mistake again, rather than getting, very hard on yourself. And also mindfulness is that we don't let our emotions get out of balance, that we realize that we're going to feel these negative emotions, but we don't let them consume the way that we think about things. So I think, you can think about, we've all known tennis players or sportsmen, maybe a golfer, that hits one bad ball and then doesn't show themselves self-compassion, but kind of gets angry at themselves, you idiot, you stupid idiot, why did you do that? And the whole thing escalates, so they don't learn, and their performance deteriorates substantially. So I think it's reasonable to say, hey, everyone makes mistakes, and kind of show yourself a little bit more self-compassion, and then you don't activate these kind of ego protective mechanisms that kind of obstruct your ability to learn. If we say we're all open to mistakes, we all make it, then we're more open to the information that will enable us to learn and to be able to improve.
Now, at the end of the book, and because it's not a novel, I'm not worried about giving away the ending, but
yeah.
You talk about offering advice for your own daughter
on
learning from failure. Is that,
yeah.
I mean, how do you do that? I mean,
Yeah, it's actually been my son lately that's been needing the advice, because when we're in Australia, we play a lot of cricket, but when we come to the US, he plays baseball, and so he's played his first season of baseball, and he only went out twice. Once he was struck out, and once he was run out at first base. The rest of the time, he made it to the base, and he was so disappointed and so angry, and he was really getting down on himself. So I gave him the whole talk about the book, we all make mistakes. The most important thing is we try hard, and that, if we're not making mistakes, we're not trying hard enough, or we're not pushing ourselves hard enough, or we're not putting ourselves in a context where we can kind of improve and really work on those abilities and those skills. So if he chose T-ball, then he would never go out, but you're not advancing as an individual. So I really tried to kind of teach him some of these skills that, our failures are going to hurt, we're going to feel bad about them, but what are you going to do about it? And, either go and practice more, or make sure that you don't hit it in that spot again, or, so I try and actually talk, even to my young son who's 8 and my daughter who's 6, I try and teach them these lessons about mistakes and failures, because I think they're kind of really important skills to be able to regulate your emotions so they don't control you. It works a little bit. He still gets really upset, but he knows. I think he hears my voice in his head, and he really tries to think about it.
I was going to ask you, having coached my daughter in soccer for the last 7 or 8 years, I find that anything I say to the other kids goes very well, but if I try to talk to her about it, the same words coming from the next dad's mouth would go over twice as well.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. The kids. The wonderful thing about your own kids, they're just like, they don't give you any respect.
No.
They'll come back and say, did you know that your friend has written a book? And I'll say, yeah, but I've written a book. It just doesn't mean anything to them.
Now, before I let you go, I want to ask you, you're on campus at a business school, Indiana University, at a time when business is not as big as it was just 2 or 3 years ago. What are you seeing in young people? Are they losing the drive and the interest in business that they had, or are their attitudes different if they're sticking with it?
Yeah, I think you know, to a certain extent, the global financial crisis is outside my area of expertise.
Mm.
But it's affected the market, for example, for students going to finance courses.
Mm-hmm.
But for all other courses, and for enrollments in the school, and for interest in business, it's just as strong or stronger. So I think, you know, some of these kind of sound business principles are obviously, you know, more important than ever. So we're not finding any real detriment towards the job market for our students, other than in the area of finance. And the Kelly School of Business is more well known, I think, for, although my finance people might disagree with me, you know, more well known for its kind of the management, the entrepreneurship, the marketing, accounting, you know, those other areas, and not, you know, we have fewer of our students getting attracted to Wall Street, as you know, some of the other institutions in, say, for example, New York or on the East Coast.
Hmm. Okay. Well, before we run out of time, I want to tell everybody that you can find Dean Shepherd's new book, From Lemons to Lemonade, Squeeze Every Last Drop of Success Out of Your Mistakes, at MrMedia.com or Amazon.com. And Dean, I wondered, are you on Twitter or Facebook? Can people find you in any of those places?
No, I'm not. I should, shouldn't I? I'm showing my age by not being on it.
Well, you know, for promoting a book, it doesn't hurt it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I've got to get up with the technology.
That's all right. Well, listen, I really appreciate being on the show today, and hope we'll get to hear from you again sometime soon.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. And folks, for dozens more interviews with business executives and entrepreneurs, surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Isidore Sharp, founder of Four Seasons Hotels and Resorts, and many more. And please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites. Whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, TrueSlant, Pointer Online, MySpace, Facebook, NetVibes, Multiply, Zanga, Friendster, Orchid, FriendFeed, Bebo, Podcast Pickle, Vox, Folio, MediaFly, PodFeed.net, Blueberry, Zencast, PageFlakes, Eons, Mihente, Zimbio, or Odeo. And subscribe to Mr. Media in iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews within the podcast section of iTunes and click the free subscribe button. It's that easy. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a piece of your day to spend it with us. Come back real soon, and thanks for listening.